Good morning. Welcome to our roundtable panel for this Friday, the 17th of July. Very nice to have you with us. Let me introduce our panel, and then we will talk, and we will comment on issues, and then we will even read your letters, and all you have to do is write them. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org, and we would love to hear from you. Are we all good?
Everything sorry.
Are we hearing from you? Yeah, sorry. I didn't have your phones.
All right. We're all good now.
Yeah.
Making up our panel this morning, WAMC's Alan Sharchak is in the house. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, everybody.
Very nice to have you here. Also, University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo. Good morning, Rosemary.
Good morning.
And WAMC newsman extraordinaire Ray Graff.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you, sir?
I feel extraordinaire.
Good. Do you really?
No, not really. Yeah. Haven't felt that way in a good 30 years. But still.
It's very nice to have you with us. I will admit, we talk about this. We talk about different stories, and we talk about different horrific acts. And sometimes they all trouble you, of course. And I think there's a point where you become numb over what happens, because there's just such regularity to it that it's horrid. Something about this story out of Chattanooga I found especially distressing. I can't really pinpoint it, perhaps other than, you know, my brother's a Marine. I don't know. But it's just an awful, awful story. 24-year-old Kuwaiti gunman opened fire in a military recruiting station on Thursday, then raced to a second military site where he killed four U.S. Marines, prompting a federal domestic terrorism investigation. Three other people, including a Marine Corps recruiter and a police officer, were wounded, according to law enforcement officials. The Federal Bureau of Investigation identified the gunman, who also died on Thursday, as Mohammed Youssef Abdulaziz, who became a naturalized U.S. citizen and went to high school and college in Chattanooga. Although counterterrorism officials had not been investigating Mr. Abdulaziz before Thursday's shooting, federal officials familiar with the inquiry said that his father had been investigated years ago for giving money to an organization with possible ties to terrorists. At a late-night news conference, FBI officials said that thus far they did not have anything that directly ties the suspect to international terror organizations. There has been some thought that there would be an ISIS connection, or that ISIS would at least take credit for the attack. That has not happened yet, although that, you know, is a little bit of a moving target anyway. So, Alan, what do you make of this?
Well, Joe, I've already gotten one letter criticizing me for my earlier commentary, basically tying this to terror. We know that both Al-Qaeda and the ISIS people have said, go out and kill. We know that. Find your meter and do it. So what is all this business about tying it to terrorism? Is it officially tied to terrorism? Isn't it officially not? You know, the answer is, we know that a lot of these kids and others have been inspired by the message that has been sent from afar. So to me, I'm so sorry, everybody, but it's terror, all right.
Well, it certainly is terror. It's being investigated as such. And it is, in any way you look at it, Rosemary, right, a terrorist act.
Yeah, I do think it's important to figure out what goes on in these shootings. Was it an act of terrorism when a racist crazy from South Carolina goes in and shoots up a church? Is that terrorism, or is that something else? We have to figure out what's happening. We also should be doing more to stop it. I would like to point out that all of those critics from the NRA who said that had the people in the church been armed, they would not have been killed. Marines pretty much had guns, and they were.
Don't believe they were armed.
Yeah, that's right. The critics said if they had had arms, if everybody had a gun, they could have shot back on their attacker. And it just doesn't work that way. It didn't work that way here, where you had Marines.
No, I don't believe the Marines were armed.
Oh, really?
At least the first reports I had that they were not armed.
In a military installation?
Well, it was
but the ones that were in a recruiting station.
Yeah. I know in the recruiting station, but the...
But then I think because one of the ones was injured was also in a... So I have to check, but
that's interesting.
But I believe
that
they
was
were
the
unarmed.
First thing I wondered about. Yeah.
As far as whether it's terrorism or not, at the end of the day, regardless of what you call it, four people are dead.
Right.
So we could call it whatever we want.
Mm-hmm. It is pretty terrifying.
It's horrible.
Well, you know, I'm just, Rosemary, I want to argue with you for a moment, if I may, on this business about the crazies who shot up the church. Yeah, they were crazy. Yes, they were doing their own brand of terrorism. And no, two wrongs never make a right. But the fact of the matter is, what we saw here today is internationally inspired, and we know it. It because they say it all the time.
Yeah, I'm talking about the one kid. Remember the racist kid who had the Confederate flag in it, and he went in.
Right.
And that was hate. It's classified as hate speech, and it is sort of an international movement against blacks. I think it's similar, but there is a distinction in what motivated them to act. We have a story here about James Howe out in Colorado,
right.
And that was a mental illness case. That's not what he did. Was also an act of horrible domestic terrorism, and yet it's not classified exactly as that way because mental illness is believed to have been behind it. You see what I mean? That's the only distinction I'm making.
Yeah, I think it's a distinction that's always worth making. But on the other hand, I think we have to be very careful about our protecting our people, protecting our Marines, protecting others by saying, all right, we don't want to interfere with people, but there are ways of doing this, and there are ways of finding out who have things on their mind. For example, we certainly should be monitoring all of the social media chatter that would be relevant to some kid going on a spree of this kind.
Right.
There will be people who are listening right now and who will say, no, that compromises our civil liberties. And I say, I'm sorry. You know, you're in a war situation, and this is a war situation. You have to do what you have to do.
Yeah, I guess I have no objection at all to being on high alert at military installations. That's sort of what they're about, and they certainly have proved to be targets here before. I'm not sure that really is a violation of any civil rights, so I'm in favor of it. I'm sad that, and once again, we have another man with a Muslim background and a Muslim name who's named as a shooter in an incident like this, because it only makes the idea that all Muslims are extreme and deadly more easy to believe.
Yeah. Well, we've had some very bad situations in this country. Certainly, putting people into Japanese internment camps was because everybody who was Japanese was thought to be potentially a spy or a saboteur. And that, of course, was not true. And it is not the first time that this country has done this. Lincoln suspended habeas corpus. There'll be people who say, well, you know, that was terrible too. And it was terrible. And it has been largely chastised for years, courts and others. Nevertheless, when you're in a war, you have to protect yourself.
A lot has been made in the story about the rather eerie quote in the kid's yearbook from high school. He's 24 years old, but when he graduated from high school, his quote was, "My name causes national security alerts. What does yours do?" And, you know, at the time you find, you know, I'm sure that's funny. And then now it's just really eerie. And and you have to wonder, well, what happened from the time from 18 to 24?
Right.
What the hell
right.
happened?
Why do you think this one has affected you differently than, unfortunately, an array of other shooting sprees like this?
I don't know. I think, as I said before, I think maybe because, you know, my brother's a Marine. I think that has a lot to do with it. Mm-hmm. I think just of going into, and I believe what Ray said is true, that they're unarmed and in a setting that should be as secure as could be, and to have that happen, I don't know, and just to realize that this, when you hear of something happen in Chattanooga, Tennessee,
yeah,
you know, of a military base, that pretty much tells you, well, okay, that's anywhere, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Joe Luke checked in and said, military installations, including bases and recruiting centers, are gun-free zones. This includes officers and enlisted. The only armed military police in these locations are MPs, who are not everywhere all the time. All weapons at these facilities are locked up for everyone, soldiers included. I knew that, and I know that Ray did, and I wanted to tip my hat to him for getting it right.
And also, I mean, you look at Fort Hood.
Yes.
And these guys were not walking around with guns while so many were gunned down.
Okay, so this is not going to help at all the argument of to stop people who are against gun control saying guns are adding to the problem, not stopping it.
Well, one of the other issues, too, is that when you look at the pictures from this event, it basically looks like a strip mall. I mean, it is a military installation, but it's a huge community.
Right.
And so the area where it was where people in the military and their families do their shopping and do all their stuff. And you know, next to them, I think there was a barber shop and a phone store. Between these two places, so you know, it's very much a
living area.
Right? A commercial section, and you know, it's not what we think of as a military base. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll get a few letters, and then we'll get the news from the BBC. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.
Support for WAMC comes from the 2015 Open Studio Tour, a self-guided tour featuring 16 artists, including Virginia McNeese, Leslie First, Clarence King, Leslie Peck, and their working studios located throughout Washington County, tomorrow and Sunday from 10 to 6, studiotour.org for map. Elements Hot Tub Spa, downtown Amherst, Massachusetts, offering hot tubs in 5 indoor or outdoor private rooms, plus a team of massage therapists for individuals and couples. ElementsHotTubSpa.com for gift certificates and photo gallery. Harrington's Lumber, Millwork, and Building Supplies, offering the Marvin Next Generation Ultimate Double Hung Window, a traditional window that automatically locks when closed. We share your passion, Harrington's.com. And Berkshire Medical Center's Joint Replacement Program, private rooms, pre-surgical education and rehabilitation, program coordinator, and 10 orthopedic surgeons, 413-395-7680.
San Francisco, pretty cool.
Yeah.
Nice stuff. We welcome your comments, roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org for you to join in this morning. Alan, we've got quite a few letters. Let's get to those before the news break.
We do. Irene wants us to consider doing more on the Clinton escapes.
She writes that every day.
Yeah. every day?
Yeah, she writes every day. I was just saying to the panel, I think maybe we should write to her and say, you know, why don't we stay on topic?
Well, you're saying it now.
Yeah, so that's true. Maybe I can save myself writing a note. Go ahead. There's another one from Rich there, too, you'll see, that's very similar.
Okay, but in the meantime, Ken says, instant labeling for Muslim name shooter is terrorism. White supremacist shooter who they took for snacks at the Washington jail suggests slaughters 9 black folks, deranged, troubled kid. I guarantee you that all those folks were terrorized. All those kids were shot to pieces and Sandy Hook were terrorized. Pretty much every single person on the wrong side of a gun is terrorized. Well, past time for an Australian solution, and that's from Ken. All right. Wow, there are so many. Okay, so David said, I just got back from Europe, and while there, a friend asked, what are you, the American public, going to do that you can't have all those guns. I still can't believe that we let the gun lobby code our level of safety. And Mills says, correct, it should be called a military community, not a base. George says, whether the shooting in Charleston or this latest attack both fit the definition of terrorism, an act of violence intended to achieve political ends through the generation of fear. According to the FBI, a violent act intended to intimidate or coerce a government or a civilian population. And that's from George. And Scott says, the first location was a recruiting office in a civilian strip mall. It was among civilian businesses. These satellite recruiting offices are all over. And let's see here. Robert says, panel, whenever soldiers are killed in a terrorist attack, someone bemoans the fact that the victims weren't allowed to carry loaded weapons while off duty. Soldiers are overwhelmingly young men, specifically being trained to use violence to resolve problems, whose main off-duty activities involve drinking beer or the enlisted men's club, while loaded weapons...
That's pretty harsh.
What he said. Yes, it is. I think it's wrong. And as a matter of fact, in the New York City Police Department, I believe everybody's required to. Am I wrong about that? I think I'm
off-duty,
right.
You mean?
Interesting. Yes, I do. And let's see. That's that. And I guess that's it. Joe, do you see something else?
No, I think that's good. And just in time, because we're going to take a break and we'll be back. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Ray Graff, Rosemary Armeo make up the panel this morning. We welcome your letters. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome to our roundtable panel. This morning, we have Alan Chartok, Ray Graff, Rosemary Armeo. I'm Joe Donahue. We welcome your comments.
Yeah, roundtable
at that's right. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. And we have many more letters that have come in since we broke. So let's go to those, and then we'll move on to other topics.
We already heard one to a customer. Okay, everybody, if possible. Alan says Elliot, you are in a war situation and you have to do what you have to do. That speech sounds what justified Nazism. It's justified genocide of Native Americans. It justified internment of Americans that look Japanese. I hear it to justify genocide in Gaza. This is very dangerous speech and thinking. Well, thank you very much, Elliot. I just disagree with you.
I totally agree, Elliot. Good letter.
Well, go ahead, Rosemary.
I'm sorry. No.
It makes me very angry. I mean, I never justified Nazism or the killing of Indians or anything else. In fact, we've all talked about that. I am saying that in this situation, you have to be very careful, and there is always a line, obviously. Elliot's right about that. But you know, I am outraged by that comment, and I'm outraged by you, Rosemary.
Okay, well, at the risk of further outraging you, I don't think Elliot said it justified anything. He said it's the way of thinking that we do anything
we
to protect ourselves, and that was used. It was used to justify
No. I never said do anything. I obviously think you have to do what you have to do, and that means going up to a line, and that line means that you do not excuse, irrational talk on the internet and the chat rooms and the rest of the stuff, which might lead you to prevent a tragedy of this kind. And I take great exception to the letter and to you.
But as a practical matter, how do you filter and sift all the internet chatter? I think it's impossible.
Well, especially when there's so much of it is underground, yeah.
What you do is ban it.
You can't.
And that's what we're headed towards.
But
if you really want to stop violence, ban the guns. Don't ban the talk about anything.
With
ban
all
the
due
guns.
Respect to that argument, with all due respect to that argument, you ban guns, ISIS still exists. This is not this. There are plenty of those gun-related issues and issues where you can say, let's control the guns. This is not one of them. This is not one of those.
No, Ray, but it is symptomatic of what goes on in this country. And I do think we have to do much more on guns, and Rosemary's right about that. And I do think we have to walk to the line of saying, all right, there is information and chatter and other things out there which can be used to stop this kind of terrible carnage. So it isn't one or the other. It's both.
Okay.
Other letters?
Well, yeah. Let's see. I'm trying the best I can here. Terror. Dylan Roof was trying to start a race war. Black churches were the one place where people felt relatively safe, and he went to show them that there is no safe haven. He is a domestic terrorist. Why do we call black people thugs and white people disturbed? I don't know that you, that may be what you do. It's not what I do. And from Jim, observing many of these nations from afar, I'm struck by the fact that they are frozen back in the time of the Crusades. They even call Americans and Europeans crusaders when, in fact, their oppressor for centuries was the Ottoman Empire. There was a time when this area led the world in science. I don't get what they want.
They want us to die. See.
Yes. I think that's true, but what is the philosophical motivation for that attitude?
Are you going to let that one hang out there, Ray? I think he was asking.
Oh, you're asking me? Yeah, well, I think so. Yeah, you know what? I need a lifeline for that.
Anybody?
I have no idea.
Yeah, okay. Somebody else says, correct, it should be called a military community, not a base. And whether the shooting in Charleston or this latest attack, stop me if I already read it, both fit the definition of terrorism, an act of violence intended to achieve political ends through the generation of fear. Yes, we did do that one. I guess that's it. Joe, you see anything else?
No.
Wait a second.
Okay.
Here.
All right.
I begin every day, Joe and the roundtable members, I begin every day of the summer by listening to the roundtable, and one of the very few places in the media where intelligent people disagree about the news of the day and still get along. It is a remarkable and valuable hour for each weekday. Let me offer my annual pleas. Seasonal listeners to WAMC should support the station during the weeks or the month that they dwell in WAMC land. Thanks to everybody.
That's a nice letter.
Very nice. All right, let's move on. Rosemary made mention of this, but we should talk about it as well. The guilty verdict for James Holmes in the Aurora attack. Inside the courtroom, the families of the dead and wounded watched in silence on Thursday afternoon as the judge shuffled through a stack of verdict forms containing the fate of James Holmes, the gunman, who slipped into a Colorado movie theater in 2012 and opened fire on their sons and daughters, friends, and loved ones. He repeated 165 times over an entire hour the word guilty for each count of murder and attempted murder. The family sobbed quietly, clutched one another's shoulders, and nodded along to a reaction of guilt that many had been waiting nearly 3 years to hear. And this was after a 10-week trial, one of the longest and most complex in the state's history. It took a jury of 9 women and 3 men about 12 hours of deliberation over 2 days to convict Mr. Holmes on all counts. He now faces a lengthy sentencing process in which prosecutors are seeking the death penalty.
I have an opinion. I'm afraid it's going to get me in trouble again. I think what he did was horrible, but I think a justice system that can take a man who has schizophrenia, probably had a psychotic break, and say he's still legally sane, and sentence him possibly to death. That's what he faces now. Is really, really messed up. This is a man who belongs in a hospital.
I would argue that. Don't you think? I mean, he belonged to the hospital before it happened, obviously, right?
That would have been ideal, yes.
And but now you have these of the 12 people who were killed, 70 were wounded. So I don't know how you get away from that fact that he goes away for the rest of his life.
He would go away for the rest of his life, just as Hinckley went away for shooting the president. But he has a mental illness. The man, and what is the difference? And we do have this distinction in our legal system between mental illness and sanity. And there's one other thing. This was a show trial. It was that 1 hour of saying guilty, guilty, guilty over and over again was designed for the relatives and for the survivors. But that's not what the criminal justice is supposed to be for. It's supposed to be for the person accused who could lose his life worth of freedom and his very life. And I think this was like kind of disgusting to watch.
It's not really a show trial when those are the protocols you have. I mean, it's the reverse of that because they're following the protocols that you have to follow.
What protocols?
Have to announce the guilty verdict.
You don't have to do it 165 times.
You don't?
Like that. No,
you just don't. Don't you have to announce all the verdicts? Just happened that there were 165 counts against
him. Let's even go back. 165 counts? Who wrote that indictment? This was all designed for show. I think there's just something wrong. And at the same time, while I'm saying that, it does not at all mean I condone going into a movie theater and shooting it up. I think his crime was horrible, but the way we've dealt with it requires some thought about the way our system works.
Why do you think the trial took so long?
Well, Rosemary.
There were a lot of reasons having to do with how to present it, having to do with his being analyzed by, I think, four or five different psychiatrists for both sides talked to him. There were lots of motions about some of them involved whether reporters had to testify.
Alan?
First of all, I'm delighted that he was found guilty. I think that there's a big difference in what is going to happen. I think he should be put away for life. I think that it may well be that the penalty phase becomes much more interesting, which is whether or not, because of the mitigating factor of the schizophrenia, that you execute him. But I think very dangerous man obviously did this. And I take some difference with you about the difference between putting somebody in a hospital and putting somebody in a prison. You know, our hospitals, inevitably, we are told that when somebody is better, that they're mentally healthy, they get out. That seems to be the thing. Yoko Ono shows up every year to make sure that John Lennon's killer doesn't get paroled from prison, whereas in mental institutions, I think it's a whole ball of wax that allows people to claim after all, in the end, that they are rehabilitated, that they are mentally fit, and that they can go out into society after killing all those people in that movie theater.
May I point out again that we are talking still about an institutional failure, that a hospital for the criminally mentally insane, which is what he is. I've visited these places like in Lima, Ohio. They're like prisons. Mm-hmm. And if it's too easy to get out of them, that's a problem with our system, making it too easy to get out, rather than with a man who is he's really messed up. What he did was horrible, but his own life is horrible. He's 24 years old, PhD neuroscience student, and voices take over his head and compel him to do this. That's insane. Mm.
Let's pose a hypothetical moral question for Rosemary and the panel. So let's say that this fellow is entirely rehabilitated at some point 10, 20, 30 years down the road. Then, as a nation founded on Judeo-Christian beliefs, one of rehabilitation and the ultimate rehabilitation of the soul being possible, then do you let that guy out?
Well, I mean, this is not even hypothetical. You have that with Hinckley, the guy who shot David Hinckley. Is that his first name?
I don't think this guy will ever get out.
Yeah, he won't. And neither will someone who shot up, who killed 12 people and injured. Hinckley won't get out. And neither will Holmes.
You meant Holmes.
Yeah.
But Hinckley does get...
He gets visits. They're highly supervised. They're watched by the press.
Okay.
Yes, they are.
All right.
They are. And actually, even if he were sentenced to life in prison, wouldn't there be a time at some point where there'd be parole? We consider that for everybody as part of
the possibility.
The possibility,
well, no,
exactly.
No. There are some, of course, who are sentenced without the possibility of parole. So horrendous is what they have done.
And this may qualify. So why not a mental hospital for the criminally insane with no possibility of parole? Why is that?
Well,
not?
I've never heard of it, but I'm sure it's possible, but I've never heard of it.
So when he's cured, then theoretically, then he goes to prison.
I mean, the truth is, right, you don't cure schizophrenia.
That's a good point.
Like that's right.
You
I
do
don't.
Not. This is that. That's why I'm saying the system is, it's made for punishment and showing off to the people who suffer that we recognize your suffering. Well, I understand the value of that, but that's not what the justice system should be about. It should be about justice for this man who is going to lose freedom and possibly his life.
But is there a level of Is there a level of crime where at one point society says you are now irredeemable? We will, regardless of what happens, you are done. You are out of the system.
So what is that? If he shot and only injured six people, would he be at that level? What if it was one
person? I'm asking the panel.
Yeah, I don't think so.
No, I agree with you. I think I agree with you, Ray. I think there comes a point when something is so horrible that the society has to say, now in some places, they just cut somebody's head off with a sword. We don't do that. And Rosemary's right. We can do a lot better in our criminal justice system than we're doing, and in our mental health system than we're doing. But in the meantime, Rosemary's very concerned about the health of this young man. I'm concerned about all those people in that movie theater who didn't deserve it.
And I would just like to get, and we're way past a break, but because I think Ray's question was a very good one of asking that of, you know, because I agree with you that I don't think you're going to cure the schizophrenia.
Right.
But by the same token, this Hinckley case is fascinating to me because he does have visits. They're 17-day visits. He's allowed 8 of these. He's able to go out regularly. So last year, James Brady dies. They rule that a homicide. And mm-hmm. he doesn't face
That's
any
correct.
Additional charges.
Mm-hmm.
So how does that work?
I mean, he was sentenced for that. Wasn't Brady's charge? Wasn't that? You know, I have to read the case.
No,
wasn't murder. It wasn't murder because the guy wasn't dead.
So then he dies, and then he goes to, and then he dies, and then they rule it as a homicide.
That's double jeopardy. He's already sentenced for the attempted murder, and then the guy dies, and it's decades later. That's not
it's a different crime. It's a different crime, Rosemary. Somebody dies and you've already gone to jail for something else, and he dies. It's now a homicide. Yeah, no, I have no doubt that it is not double jeopardy.
Well, now we're on a fine point, but the guy died so many years later. That's a kind of a ridiculous thing.
But the reason I brought it up is not to disagree with you, Rosemary.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting point.
To underscore your point that the system is really messed
up. Yeah, and here's another one. It's not like all murders are equal. Sirhan Sirhan killed one person, but that person was Robert Kennedy, and he has been in jail longer than most people for murder. For any kind of murder, first degree, premeditated, brutal murders in this country, in the history of this country. Is that fair?
Two wrongs don't make a right. It's okay with me.
What's the two wrongs?
It's okay
thing?
With me. He should never, because you're saying other people are get out faster. So, therefore, it's wrong that he's there.
What I'm saying
again
is that
again.
We need a justice system that treats all crimes and all people equally, and we are far from that.
Well, you know, you killed a presidential candidate, you took a revolver, you shot his brains out. I'm so sorry. Maybe you don't want to execute him, but putting him in jail for the rest of his life is fine by me.
So you do agree with Ray, or with the prospect he put out, that some crimes are so beyond the pale that they get a special emphasis from society?
I didn't say that at all.
No, you posed
it
as
a
question. Yeah, I understand.
But I mean, because we take it differently in our criminal justice system if it is a police officer, if it is
not an equal murder.
If it's an old person, or if it's a hate crime.
I have argued around the world that journalists should be treated that way too. That if you write about corruption and then you're killed, that should be treated like a police thing. So I'm on the other side of this too.
Everybody is just as special as everybody else. You kill somebody, you did something very, very bad.
Yeah.
Everybody has the life in them.
Let's take a break. We are very late for the break, so we will take that and make everyone happy, and then we'll be back in a moment to continue our conversation. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Support for WAMC comes from the Wild Center, featuring Wild Walk, 1,000 feet of elevated bridges and experiences in the Adirondack treetops. Wildcenter.org for details. Atelier Rene Fine Framing, custom picture framing at the Chocolate Factory in Red Hook, conservation materials and methods, atelierrenefineframing.com. Mother Earth Storehouse, a Hudson Valley natural food market and vitamin center with locations in Kingston, Poughkeepsie, and Saugerties, serving the community since 1978, MotherEarthStorehouse.com. And the Linda WAMC's Performing Arts Studio, presenting a range of programming for the arts and community, thelinda.org.
Panelists still having
the Hinckley discussion.
Yeah. So,
very interesting.
Yeah. We'll
maybe we'll hear from some lawyer listeners. That would be fun to.
Yeah, that's always fun.
Here's a story I want to get to because I find it fairly fascinating. The Conservative government in Britain has set its sights on remaking the BBC. The broadcaster supported by a national license fee after a political campaign in which the Conservatives complained that the BBC's news coverage has a left-wing bias. On Thursday, the story, Dateline London, on Thursday, the government secretary of state for culture, media, and sport, John Whittingdale, presented a green paper to Parliament, the opening of a comprehensive study of the BBC's future, suggesting that the corporation could become smaller, less costly, and less competitive with British newspapers and private television channels. Panel, please discuss. Alan?
Well, you know, when Maggie Thatcher was the Prime Minister, she said the same thing. And we got a delegation at WAMC who said, how do you do it? Because we're being told we're going to have to do it ourselves. And I sort of told them how we did it. And not privatize so much as publicize so that we get a little bit of money from the federal government, but very little. And I explained about fund drives and how we did things. And they were sitting there with their a gray look and their mouths half open. They were not happy. So here we are all these years later, and they're doing the same thing. The conservatives are quite right, saying everything that is free discussion is left wing. Therefore, we can't have the BBC. And the BBC, of course, is supported by a lot of money. You know, when you pay all that money, what is it, a couple of $100 or $150 for a license? When you buy a television, you buy a license, and all of that money adds up. And so when you say to people in an election, do you want to not pay that money? Yeah, we don't want to pay the money. So it's not extraordinary that this is happening. However, it's been a long time since Maggie Thatcher, and one wonders whether they're really going to get away with it.
Yeah. What Alan said, it's so tempting to be part of a newspaper industry that's fallen apart for lack of commercial support to look at the British model and say, let's have people pay for it. It becomes sort of a government function. And you have a very well-oiled system. The BBC is massive and pretty impressive. And yet then you're at the mercy of its certain administrations, in this case, a conservative one, that's saying, let's economize. They don't say, let's cut it out or change it. Let's economize. If you cut back, if you get rid of reporters, if you change the amount of time they have, you're talking about really scaling back, hurting the organization, and that's what the conservatives want to do. So I do end up thinking our system, which is you separate government from media, is far better, even if you have to have fund drives.
I think you're right. I mean, as I said, we get very little money from the feds. Very little, and very little comparative to our budget, and very little compared to the state. Basically a drop in the bucket. Now, it's not that it's unimportant. It is, and we like to have it. Nevertheless, every once in a while, somebody will start all over again and say, take the money away from public broadcasting. I know that Chris Gibson, the Republican congressman from our area shocked his colleagues by saying, this is wrong, this isn't why we're here, and I'm voting against this proposal. But we know if certain politicians got their way, they would make it clear that they don't want to give government support to any press, including Barney or Big Burr or anybody else, simply because they don't want to.
Mm-hmm. I want to learn more about the BBC Trust. There's a whole point in this article about that is one of the things that they're going to be looking at is the reorganization of this BBC Trust. Does anybody know about that, of how that works?
Okay, that's my homework for the weekend.
Okay. All right. I will. Let me take
why don't we take an educated guess? The idea of the trust is to keep a firewall between politicians, and that's why we have the Corporation for Public Broadcasting in this country, by the way. You know, Ronald Reagan did not like NPR, there were legends that he had called it news from Managua, which was a slur. But all of the money goes in our society to something called the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which gives out the money and does so with a couple of years in advance. And I have a feeling that if when we investigate this, at least it should be, that we're going to find out, Joe, that this was the intention here to protect the BBC from political influence.
Well, we are out of time, but I want to thank everyone for their contributions. We welcome your letters, roundtable@wamc.org. Alan, Raymond, Rosemary, thank you very much.
Have a good weekend.
You're welcome.
Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Guys.
Thank you.